Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Lovely Becoming podcast. My name is Mimi, and today's guest is Madison White, who is amazing. Madison and I met through a body image processing group years ago when I was an undergrad and lived in Nashville, and she just shines, which you can't see the all caps that I typed that in. But I wanted to bring her on because she's one of the few people I know who pursued a career that they love outside of treating eating disorders. And that feels super important and beautiful to talk about. Welcome, Madison.
Hi.
Hello. Tell us about yourself. What do you do?
Oh,
what do
man.
You love?
Okay. What I do, I like to help people. And I do that right now through real estate. But usually I'm just out here trying to make my life lighter or the people around me lighter. So I also like to paint. I love my pets. I don't know. I'm just out here being silly.
I love it. I love your Instagram, and we have so much to get into. So I'm just going to wait for the excitement.
Perfect.
All right. So tell me about your experiences in eating disorder treatment, just diving right in, being in a plus size body.
Okay. So my experience in eating disorders, specifically being a plus size body. So I want to make sure I say this in the best way possible, so not like be triggering for anyone or anything like that. But I was in treatment for 5 years. A lot of people are in a much different body at the end of that time than I was at the beginning. And so I've experienced treatment in like a range of body sizes, right? And something that I'm sure you know and have seen people talk about a lot is recovering into a plus size body is a lot different than recovering into a straight size body.
Yes.
And specifically, extremely challenging emotionally. And it has been hard. My actual treatment was wonderful. Everybody I interacted with was great. Nobody ever brought up my body size or anything like that to this day, if I go to treatment or anything. So as far as my actual treatment, I would say I probably didn't have an experience that was any different from anybody else being in a plus size body or being in a straight size body from my providers. But my life now, coping with a brain that was wired through eating disorder thoughts and behavior and living in a body that challenges those thoughts all the, you know, like basically all the time is particularly difficult. And and I wouldn't change anything for sure. But for me to say, oh, it's like not any different, it would be not the truth. It is very challenging for me. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. An experience that we don't hear as much is people experiencing treatment in different size bodies and sort of noticing how people treat you or like the advice that you might get or the access. I'm curious about that piece, like diagnosis and what, to the extent that you feel comfortable sharing.
Yeah, totally.
That looked like for you.
Yeah, I have gotten all of my doctor recommendations post-treatment from my treatment team. So as far as doctors, I feel like I have like no bias whatsoever. My gynecologist office, I had like one particularly negative experience there when I first came like well into treatment, where they did not have like appropriate gown size for me. And they apologized profusely and done everything to make it right. And now they keep both gown sizes in every single exam room. So that's not something I encounter anymore. And my doctors, as soon as they'll maybe ask me a question in relation to my body or weight, I'll clearly state I've been in treatment or recovery for this long. So any discussions about weight loss or my body size or anything are just not welcome. So even in terms of, I've had to go to a lot of doctors that are, I can't remember what they're called. What's the doctor that you go to for foot thing? Orthopedics. Orthopedics, which are usually someplace that is the first thing they're going to talk about. That is like largely their platform is weight based regarding pain and things like that. And I have just always walked into the office. I tell the doctor before they get started, like what I will and won't be entertaining and why. And they've never challenged that. I've actually only had positive responses from that. So as far as my treatment from the world, it has not been any different. As far as my experience of the world, it's different. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I like, have to think about so many things I didn't have to think about before. But as when I speak up about different things I need, because my body's a different size now, I've never been met with resistance. So yeah. Does that make sense? I don't know if you have further questions about that, but I could talk about what it's like to live in a larger body all day, because it's so new to me and so hard. It's very hard. So it's something that comes up every single day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I so appreciate that. And I think something that I'm hearing is that there's possibility and there's hope. And it's really exciting to hear that there are people who are willing to listen. There are people who, when you have access to those providers, when you go through your team, there can be joy and positive experiences, and and bringing attention to those good experiences can be really important, especially within the narrative, like, there's no kindness, there's no, you know, accessibility. But I think this is another piece that's important.
Yeah, something that I've really noticed about accessibility in my specific experience. So people, I would say, in general, want to like listen to me, believe me, care about me, whatever. A, because of my personality, and B, because like I'm a very happy-go-lucky, kind white woman. So I know my experience comes with like privilege. And when I speak up, people are probably going to listen, right? So it's not like everyone's experience is like this. I'm not disabled, you know, and it's very different. But for the experiences I've had, everybody, I like clearly outline what is not accessible in the situation and how hurtful it is. And people trip over themselves trying to fix it. So not, I know, again, that cannot be everyone's experience, but it is my experience now.
Yeah.
The more I advocate for myself, the more like the world moves a little bit. But if I weren't advocating for myself, no, I would not be comfortable in pretty much any setting. So whether that just be like the seating that is available, or the, I don't know, amount of time standing that's required to do something, or whatever it is, the world has been pretty responsive to me. But I think it's because of just what I look like inherently. People find me likable and want to be liked by me, so they'll help. I'm like, I have all of the attributes that, you know, men want to listen to. I'm really friendly and nice and like all the things. So I just use it to my advantage. But I know that that is not everyone's experience.
Yeah. I mean, I think you said it perfectly. There's both that privilege to acknowledge and also that honoring of your experiences being good.
Yeah. Yeah. My experiences with people are good. My experiences in the world separately from that are like extremely limiting and discriminatory in general. So I feel both things.
Yeah. My goodness. I'm like, every question could be a whole podcast.
I know. I'm sorry. I was going to say, I could talk about that particular one forever. Yes. And as great a detail as I have to offer, but yeah.
I love it. Maybe we'll come back. This is just going to be so good.
Okay, great.
If you don't already know, Madison is an incredible realtor, and lots of people agree. She's been a top producing agent at her company for the past 5 years since leaving a team and creating her own brand, Homes by Madison. How did you first enter the world of real estate, and how did you grow trust in yourself as a business owner and human?
Okay, great. My relationship with my job and my relationship with treatment and recovery are so intertwined. I had been in real estate for 2 years, maybe a year and a half before I knew that I had an eating disorder. Just as a point of reference, I had an eating disorder my whole life, but I didn't know until I had been doing this job for a minute. And I was working So the way I got into real estate in the first place is because I quit my job in marketing that I was a baby. It was my first job out of college. And I did not know what I was going to do next, but I was having my first like full-blown, this is depression. And in that period of time, my roommate, I lived with five guys in a random Craigslist house in East Nashville. My roommate owned the house and was going to get his real estate license so that his realtor could start sending him referrals because he was sending her so much business. She offered and asked me to take the class with him. And I could not stop laughing because I was picture when I picture a realtor, I picture blazer over the shoulder, purse dog in tow, nails done, hair done, like, let's go. And I could not stop laughing because I am a cozy girl. And after when I decided to take the classes because I didn't know what I was going to do anyway. And I was just kind of, I guess, trying to prove to my parents that I was going to make it out of this sad period, not knowing that it was depression and I wasn't just lazy. And I ended up adoring it. So that was the fluke. I did not mean to like it, but I loved it. And I thought I'll do this for a few years. And that was 8 years ago. So I guess I'm going to keep it up. I love it. And
Yes.
then my first job is the one that I got because I posted, as soon as I got my license, my resume on the East Nashville Facebook page. And a realtor saw it and hired me and then referred me to this team. So that's how I got into real estate. And then I was on the team for 2.5 years. It really was helpful that the person I was working for had no boundaries, wanted to work 24/7 and like nothing was ever enough because I was an achiever. So that really was right in line with what I wanted to be doing. And then as I was trying to figure out why some of my eating disorder behavior that was transitioning into eating disorder behavior that I could not deny. Like before, it was not some the, my behavior, thoughts, things like that weren't the standard two eating disorders you're taught about in middle school, you know? So I didn't know that that was happening. I didn't know something was wrong because what was happening was very normalized in my familial culture and all of that. And then, like maybe a year before I quit the team, I started having behaviors that fit into those boxes. And I couldn't not know. It was impossible not to know that that was what was happening. And whenever I realized something was going on, I found one podcast that mentioned something about food that was different than dieting because I knew that couldn't help me. I've been doing that my entire life. And it was Food Psych. I know. This is 7, 6 years ago, seven, something like that, a long time ago. And they mentioned intuitive eating, and they were interviewing somebody on their podcast about they had who had recovered from eating disorder, whose story was very similar to mine all along, which is how I found out my previous behavior was also an eating disorder because they were discussing how it was an eating disorder on the podcast. And they then the podcast said, like, if you need help or resources, go to our website, look for people who are in your area. There was one person in our area listed on the website. I called her. She called me back, told me to come in the next day, which, you know, therapists and nutritionists and all that. If they tell you to come in the next day, it's like not a good sign. They're like, oh, I'll clear my schedule for a new client. It was not great. And that person is the one who told me. Well, they asked me first if there was any way I could create any boundaries in my work life with my current employer or my current team leader, agent, whatever you want to call it. And I said no. And they said, okay, if you want to get better, you're going to have to quit your job. And I was like, yeah, I know. Because I had told them everything that, you know, was happening, whatever. And so I quit my job like 3 days later. And I've been solo ever since. I know. Oh gosh. But as far as a career that allowed me to have the space and control over my own life schedule, flexibility, whatever, real estate was incredible for someone in recovery or treatment. because even now, this week, I wouldn't say I am depressed, but I'm definitely experiencing the cycle that were I not on medication would be a full-blown depression. And so I haven't left my house since Monday. It's Thursday. And no one knows. Well, my parents know because they saw me on the app and called. But but I'm still no one I didn't have to call into a boss or anything. My clients are taken care of. Everything's normal except for me. And so I've just been at home painting in my pajamas. So yeah, real estate's pretty great if you are looking for a flexible schedule that allows you to like play with your, I don't know. I wanted to say dark passenger. Like this was Dexter. Okay.
Oh, yes. Yes.
He always calls his dark passenger. I always like mention my anxiety, depression as like something that I'm carrying around, like somebody who's attached to me, you know, just like my little shadow.
Yeah. Yes.
Let's move on.
Anyways. This is great. I'm a big fan of your authenticity and vulnerability in a career outside of strictly mental health. What is it like to share parts of your story within your real estate community? How's that received?
Awesome. I love it for a variety of reasons. Whenever, like as we just talked about, I became a solo agent because I was in treatment. So I had to move companies, which is the whole thing. Mm-hmm. I had a lot going on in that period of time in my life. And then I had some medical issues for the next 2 years. So in order for me to feel safe talking to people, I have to be able to be honest. And so I just told everyone the whole time. I mean, every coworker, every boss, every client, everybody. And there is nobody who has worked with me ever who does not know that I have an eating disorder or that I'm in recovery from an eating disorder. It makes me feel powerful, actually, because there's no one that I bring that up to that treats it casually. And it immediately kind of disarms people as far as if they want to, I don't know, if they don't want to talk about things they're anxious about the process, if it's a client, if they have mental health issues and that's coming into play when they're thinking about buying a house, which is like, if you have anxiety, nothing could give you more anxiety. Like,
yeah.
Things like that. I just get to lay the groundwork of like, okay, our foundation here of your interactions with me, whether you're another realtor or you're a client, our baseline is going to be transparency and focusing on what really matters. And then we build up like the whole experience from then. And that's the life I want. So I just get to demand that everybody is coming to the table as a somewhat transparent version of themselves. So I love it. But vulnerability comes very easy to me. So I know that comes with the territory. I also think it's an ADHD thing that we just love to overshare. So I don't know. I want to feel connected to people. And when I talk about the fact that I have depression or, you know, like any of this, and that at the time I had therapy multiple times a week. And during those times, I won't respond to you. And afterwards, I typically need time, downtime. So I'll forward your questions to someone who can answer them, et cetera. I feel like it just feels so countercultural. And I love that feeling.
Yes.
It almost feels like sticking it to the man, but there's no man. Like, I'm just like, no, we're going to do this as real people.
Yes.
And you don't have a choice because that's how I'm showing up.
Incredible. The amount of delegation I hear is so beautiful. And like, there are things that I'm not going to do and I'm going to protect my energy and capacity. And it's a beautiful energy and capacity.
Yeah, I think so. Including limiting the amount of people I work with. That's the thing that during these crazy seasons of real estate has been different about me from even people I'm really close to, is that I set a limit of clients I can work with at one time because that's the maximum amount of people I can be emotionally invested in. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to bring my whole self to this with you. I'm going to never let you do the hard things alone. I'm going to hype you up when you're anxious. And I can only do that for like 5 people at a time. So anyone else just has to wait or go find somebody else, and that's fine. But boundaries like that have just been awesome, and I never would have had them without being in treatment.
Yay. Incredible. Incredible. What about the chickens?
I love that that's the whole question. What about the chickens? Okay, so in Nashville, you can have backyard chickens. There's a certain number. I may or may not have that number. And you can have them. And I always kind of wanted to. That first house I lived in with that guy where he got his real estate license, or we got our licenses together, had an old chicken coop. And that's how I found out you could do this. And I don't know. It was just kind of a dream since then, but I forgot about it. And then 2 winters ago is when they switched my medication to try to go to an SSNI, instead of SSRI, to see if it helped with ADHD. And it did A, not help. And B, I was experiencing depression for like a very long time, like months and months and months. After not having it for probably 8 months, I had it for 50% of the month for like 5 months. So significant change. And for me, the only thing that can get the range of activities started that are necessary for a day or supporting myself, taking care of my clients, is my dog. Because even though I wake up and I feel nothing about him anymore on those days, this like at the time the most important character in my life, I feel nothing for, I know he has to eat via me feeding him, and I'm not gonna not let him eat that day. Even if I wasn't gonna make myself breakfast, I have to make him breakfast. So by that time, I'm already in the kitchen. I might as well just walk to the fridge right next to me and eat something out of it, and then I'll have breakfast. So pets were like a conduit for taking care of myself. And I knew that being outside, even just for a few minutes a day, would start that whole process too. And so I got chickens exclusively because of depression, exclusively because I needed a chore that took me outside. And the only thing I found that can overcome depression, ADHD, whatever, whenever I can't get up or get things started, is pets. So that's why I got pets. So I got a bunch of chickens, and I thought it would be kind of cool. And it ended up being like the key to my mental health for the last few years. So they still do that for me. And the peace of just sitting outside and watching them or interacting with them brought me back this child version of myself I forgot about. I totally forgot how obsessed with animals I was as a kid. Like, my parents thought I was going to be a vet until I was in 9th grade. Like, I was confident until I found out it was not emotionally supporting the animals, but it was like operating on them. That changed things for me. I've always felt so peaceful around animals. And so, yeah, now I talk about chickens like at least an hour a day.
Amazing. I love that aspect of like finding what you loved from the beginning. And
I totally forgot. How did I forget how much I love animals? I don't understand. It's nonsense, because animals are like, I'm always joyful around them, always present, not anxious. It just makes me feel peaceful to watch nature interact. It makes me feel insignificant, which I love, because it makes everything I'm worried about feel insignificant.
That's beautiful.
That was a cute face.
I wish everyone could see it, but I love that. It reminds me of that like Pinteresty quote where it's like, find what your soul loves. And it's like,
yeah, that's me as a person. That has been me as a person forever. But again, probably because I was always struggling with depression. So I was probably always trying to figure out like, how do we get out of this?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. Tell us about body image and your experiences being in a relationship and navigating dating. What have your experiences been like talking about eating disorders with your partner?
Yeah, that is such a big question that no one has ever asked me before. And I feel like so many people are probably struggling with or concerned about or everything like that. I met my partner on Bumble, which is a site I talked a lot of shit about before I found my partner on Bumble. So I deserve this. I love being humbled. I thought the men on Bumble have to all be just, I don't even know what the word is, just people, men who will just want women to do everything for them because the woman has to speak first. And that is not true. So if you hold that belief about Bumble, just question yourself. It may not be that way. When I met him, I had been in treatment for 4 years. So really far into treatment. I was past most of the big hurdles, which for me were like the whole first year. I just had to leave anything I liked food-wise in the fridge. I had to have every, you know, exposure. I was just, it was so difficult. It was so all-encompassing. Like, I mean, you know, yeah. It was intense. It was just so emotional and so intense being, it was my first year as a therapy treatment. All of it was at one time. So this was past that when I feel like I had like a pretty good thing going. And I don't remember if I was nervous about, I definitely knew I was nervous about talking about my mental health, but I was pretty open about talking about the eating disorder. And it was pretty easy because at the time I wasn't experiencing any symptoms, I guess, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So there, it wasn't like I had anything to tell him that was present. So it was easy for me. So I just want to put that out there that I had an easy time as far as that goes.
Yeah.
It was not as easy for me to talk about mental health struggles because I obviously was still and will always be experiencing them. That was way more vulnerable because it was not something I was in my head past at the time. I quickly learned I was not past the eating disorder thing either.
What do you know?
Yeah, but at the time I thought I was. I thought I was in recovery. So while it wasn't that hard again because it comes so naturally to be transparent. It was very vulnerable for sure. But the person I'm with is such a beautiful human that I don't think there's any way I could have said it wrong. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like with every person who was not a good match for me, it would have gone terribly. And I'm sure it did, but I wasn't dating seriously during the earlier years because I probably couldn't tolerate anyone for very long because I was experiencing so much within me. I did not have any space to give anyone anything.
Yeah.
And he is just an amazing person. So the right fit for you, the right kind of person for you, I don't want to say like your soulmate because I'm not someone who believes in that, but someone who you could be with long term in a really happy relationship, it's not going to be as hard as you think because they will see you for all that you are. And that includes being really proud of what you've overcome, being really impressed by what you're holding and how you manage it, and wanting to be there for you. So body image wise, I mean, there's not a day to date that I have ever felt body image issues that could be stemmed back to him. And if I am feeling any body insecurity, I tell him about it and he will quickly hype me up as much as he possibly can. So I just got a hype man.
Wow.
He loves me. He loves my body the way I look. And if it changed, he would love me. He would love my body the way it looked. And it does change. And he loves me. He loves my body the way it looks. So I, with this person, I never felt insecure for any reason that I could even ground. Like maybe I was spiraling, but I couldn't root it in anything real because there's no proof of
any of my spirally thoughts because he does not see me or himself that way. So this is my first time dating somebody who also lives in a larger body. I've never done that before. So really, it's been awesome to be able to love and support him and offer healthy feedback to his insecurities that, because I've been to therapy already, you know, he was experiencing a lot of the same thoughts, a lot of the same feelings and stuff. And I had already been to treatment, so I can shut down his spirally thoughts with things that someone shut down for me. You know what I mean? And it's been really healing, and it was really challenging at first. It was triggering for me to date somebody who was living in a larger body as well, because of all of my inherent fat bias, you know? Yeah. So I would notice thoughts that I thought I didn't have anymore come up, and I would be like, why am I thinking that, you know? So I don't know. I'm rambling as always, but
well, it's important. It's, yeah, like you're hitting some key points. So
yeah, it's been awesome. In conclusion, I couldn't think of any person that would have been better for me during this period of time, because he's just so supportive and so not superficial at all, which I feel like you'd have to be to date me, because I simply will not meet those standards. I will brush my hair if I have to leave the house, and I will change out of pajamas if I have to leave the house. So if you're someone who lives in my house, you have to like someone who doesn't brush their hair and wears pajamas all day. Like,
yes. Currently wearing pajamas, yeah. So it's perfect.
But yeah, it is. It's great. Mm-hmm. I love dating in this state. And I think that before I had been to treatment, I had a lot of anxiety about dating. Mm-hmm. But as a recovered person, I can accept love. I can be supported. I can be honest when I'm feeling vulnerable. I can tell him I'm feeling insecure and receive support. It's just, it's awesome.
Oh, the best. I'm obsessed. Yeah. This is just lovely.
Well, and he had his family and my family have similar feelings about people who live in bodies like ours. Mm. So we are just kind of buddies. It was like us against the world kind of thing.
Oh my God. You should be like a Disney princess.
I would. Absolutely. Give us a plus size Disney princess.
I think it should be you though. Like specifically you.
She's a realtor. It's kind of a weird story for children.
Kids need more careers. So
that's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Okay. I'm like, I know this is going to be a long one, but I have so many questions that I really like. So
keep going. I'm into it. I love talking.
Amazing. I've heard people say your body is your one and only home, and there's a lot there. I wonder what your thoughts are on this quote, especially as a realtor. What is your relationship to the word home? What are your favorite things about your homes right now, whether referring to your body or physical space or finding home in other people?
Such a good question. This is such a thoughtful question. Let me start with my body. My body being my home is something that is probably the thing I still struggle with the most, mm-hmm. as far as things left over from someone who had an exclusively disordered relationship with food in their body. Mm-hmm. I was just taught from such a young age to not listen to it. I was put on a diet when I was in third grade. Mm-hmm. And even before that, I had picked up on all the messaging and things regarding food and bodies. There's no time for me that predates eating disorder that I can consciously remember. And so there's no time for me that predates your body is lying to you and you have to control it. Yeah. So that, if I haven't been to therapy in a while, is the thought, mindset, perspective, whatever that creeps up that I have to like keep in check. My body has changed, as I mentioned, a lot in the last few years, last 5 years, whatever. And so I don't know. It's one of those things that, like, when I look in the mirror, it's always surprising to me because it looks different than I expect, because I was so used to the way it looked for a long time, or it's continuing evolving. So as far as it being home to me, I really don't resonate with that. And I would love to, and I aspire to. Yeah. Something I'm working on. But it's, I'm just not there, to be honest. I live here now. You know, when I started going to treatment, I went to like a couple different energy people or healers, whatever, you know, woo-woo things when I was 25. And the feedback I got every time was like, you are not in your body. Different. Everybody always said that. Which is true. My body was something I was entirely separate from. I did not live here. I live here now, which is cool. And that's where we're at. That's how far I've gotten with the home thing. I wouldn't say like it's my safe place or my anything, but I live here now. I tolerate living here. So that's where I'm at.
Amazing. Golden.
And then as far as home in general, God, it means so much to me. Home means like the most to me. Am I going to get emotional about that? Yeah. It seems like I am. So this is like my space where, as I learned over time, I don't have to mask anything. So I don't have to pretend that I can focus or that I am not having like random bouts of energy or stimming, or that I don't know. Even though I feel very authentic in the world, I still have to control so much to stay present in a conversation. Mm-hmm. And here is where I'm safe. So like this week, as I've mentioned, I haven't left the house since Monday. Amazing. Because that makes me feel soothed. When I feel easily, like it feels very easily irritated this week, which is a feeling I hate. Irritation is next to anger. And those two feelings I'm somewhat afraid of, to be honest. I just don't like having them. So I know if I stay here, I'm not going to feel that way. because I made it something I love. First of all the furniture is size appropriate to me. Everything in here is meant for me. So I'm not going to feel any body discomfort here, which is a big deal. All my soft blankets are here. The dogs sit on my lap and I pet them and that soothes me. That's here. My boyfriend is here most of the time. So every time I'm a little bit sad or need to stop spiraling or something, I just go hug my boyfriend and I'm happy. And that's it. I don't know. It means everything to me. Home is like my peace and my freedom. And I think a lot of people feel like home ownership might feel like a trap. I don't know. Like you have to keep paying for it and what could happen and all things could happen. But I just feel so lucky. I have a little house. It's like 1,300 square feet. But it feels big to me because there's like 5 rooms that I'm safe in. So, or 5 rooms that I can just do whatever I want. And my favorite thing about my home right now is our new hallway. We have this really tiny hallway. I mean, it definitely is tiny because our house is tiny. It's a really tiny hallway that goes back to our bedroom. And I really just wanted to be reckless with color somewhere in our house. But I know if it's in a huge area, it's going to overstimulate me. I need it to be calming a lot of places. So we did the hallway. It's bright orange now. It's two-tone orange, high gloss and regular. And we put really happy art on the walls. And like half of it I painted, half of stuff we already had. And it's just so happy. So it's just like this 1.5 seconds of stimulation on my way to or from. And it feels great. It helps me wake up in the morning. It's so happy and so weird. I love it.
That's amazing.
My advice to people, like my clients, everybody, is just paint it. Just paint it. All you have to do is paint it back. So make it whatever you want. Experiment with yourself. See what feels good.
Colors are very, very important to me. And they make a huge difference in how I feel and the aesthetics and things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm reading a little bit of a caption that you wrote that I absolutely adore.
Okay.
On my first day of treatment, my counselor warned me that even if I made healing my number one priority, it would likely be 5+ years before I would be in recovery. I wept uncontrollably, not because 5 years seemed unbearable, because 26 years had been. How beautiful.
I just don't think I'll ever forget that moment. It was my first day of treatment. That was the day she also told me I had to quit my job. So I walked in there under the assumption that I had a little bit of a problem. And so we were going to fix that little bit of a problem, which was the behavior that had happened for the last year. So again, I think I have this one eating disorder behavior that's been happening for a year, and we're going to cut it off and get back to normal.
Of course.
And yeah. And in that session, I learned I had never experienced normal. And there were people who were living in a, like, without all of the rest of the eating disorder behavior I had, which I didn't even know, because no one I knew had a healthy relationship with food or their bodies. So I didn't know we could cut that out. Yeah. So when she told me we could cut that out, I was like, what?
You're like, yeah. Whoa, I was not prepared for all that.
Yeah, I just found out that not everybody thinks like this. And you're telling me that there could be a world where one day I don't think like this, where I'm not just torturing myself all day, every day. That's a thing. Mm-hmm. Isn't that how everybody is living? Isn't that why anyone is successful? Because they're beating themselves up into it.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knew compassion?
I didn't. I felt it for other people, but I definitely could not fathom being my friend. Mm. That was mind-blowing to me. The concept. Not even when it happened. Just the presentation of it being a possibility for me.
I feel like that's so apt for a lot of people who are just stuck in it and don't even know that that's a problem, or like there's something different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or yeah, there's a world where you don't have to feel or think like this, and you can still have the things that you really want most.
Mm.
It's not like a one or the other. Yeah. You can be happy and be nice to yourself. You can be successful and have compassion for yourself. You can have a business you love and friend relationships that are really deep and everything, and still, I don't know, make the most money you've ever made. It's wild.
Yeah. It's like wild. You don't have to go through punishment to get good things. You don't have to earn pleasure.
Yeah. You don't have to earn pleasure by punishment, which not something I did not think that was a thing. Not for me, at least.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I love that. Oh, well, kind of on the same subject. When I think of you, I think about life beyond eating disorders, not because of like moving past it and like you're done. I think that recovery will always be a part of us, even if that looks different from person to person. Mm-hmm. But I love that you have a life outside of it. You capture finding joy and building a life not centered on body shame and change. Now, that is kind of an assumption I was making when I was writing these questions, because we haven't caught up in a long time, but I want to hear what recovery means to you.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know why I say recovery and I don't get emotional, but when someone else says recovery in reference to me, I get emotional. Mm-hmm. Because I just never thought I would be here. Like, truly. When I found out about it, truly, when I found out about recovery being a thing, I was like, whoa, that could happen to me. That's mind-blowing. But to be sitting in it is wild. I don't know. I know I say I went to therapy for 5 years every single week. And that's a lot.
Yeah.
I wasn't just in therapy. I was in treatment. So I had a therapist. I had a dietitian, and I had a trainer I saw once a week who was eating disorder informed and non-diet. Yeah, Barb. Yeah. So I saw three people every single week. It was my life for all that time. It wasn't like the subheading. It was the heading of me. And it is most definitely one of many subheadings now. It is not even the subheading. So that is massive difference. Yeah. And life is awesome. I still experience distress and thoughts, and things come up all the time that I'll think, oh, I didn't know I was ever going to think that again. And here it is. And now I have to deal with it. But if I made a new friend today, it might be a while before you found out that I had ever had an eating disorder. Not because I'm hiding it, but it's just like not on my top list of things that I'm working through that day or dealing with, or the origin of where I am now. It's wild. I'm so young. And then when I was 25, 26 in treatment, hearing that 5 years was the likely timeline for something like this. 5 years seemed like forever. I don't know. And also short. And now in retrospect, it seemed like it was forever and also so short.
Yes.
Like there's so much of my life left. Mm. Hopefully there could be so much of my life left that does not involve an eating disorder. It's emotional. Mm-hmm. You know, the podcast maintenance phase, but this, I'm like in a maintenance phase of my mental health right now. There were just so many times that I never thought that I would make it to that. So it's awesome.
I love everything about all of this. I'm so grateful. I'm so, so grateful. I just feel like lucky to just be an observer and just.
You're so sweet.
It's pretty awesome. What are your favorite foods?
Gosh. Okay. And I'm sure this is common or maybe happened to you. Did you start loving some foods that you thought you didn't like?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So before treatment, I didn't like Thanksgiving because I didn't like Thanksgiving food. Mm-hmm. Like truly to my core, thought that I did not like it. I was not lying to myself. Mm-hmm. I didn't like it. I love like comfort food now, which is wild. There's this restaurant that we go to Goodlettsville for. So non-Nashville people, I drive like 25 minutes out of my way to go to this one little hole in the wall spot because they serve Thanksgiving style food. So mashed potatoes and green beans and cornbread, stuff like that. So I love that I now get to appreciate Thanksgiving now with that holiday coming up. I love my favorite foods. I can't even think of right now. Okay, my boyfriend makes this potato soup, one of my favorite foods. Mm-hmm. It's very, very good. And then I like any Mexican food, period. So I just had a party last weekend and we had caterers cook a bunch of Mexican food for it. And like elote, tamales, things like that. Those are all for sure my favorite food. And then my favorite food that has remained consistent pre-treatment, after recovery, whatever, is German chocolate cake, one that I've been having for my birthday every single year. Green bean casserole, specifically, only the one made by my mom. And then I can't remember anything else, so we'll go with that.
Amazing. Love it.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with you.
It's not that my taste buds changed. It's that, I don't know, I just was allowed to like things.
Yeah, I started trying things and my palate has changed so much.
Yeah.
So many things.
So much.
Oh my God. Well, the last question I ask everybody, how are you becoming?
I'm becoming peaceful. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's the way you meant the question, but that's going to be my answer. I'm becoming peaceful. And that is something I don't know if I'd ever really experienced. But the combination of everything I've learned through treatment and through being in the romantic relationship I'm in, it is culminated, plus Prozac, is culminated in, just a life that is like super peaceful. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, my family said, actually, kind of recently when I was spending time with him, that that's the biggest change they would say about me in most recent years, is that I'm peaceful now. And that kind of is my biggest priority, I guess, now, is protecting that and what's going to give me more of that. So peaceful means I'm present. I'm not really concerned about the future, which, as someone with anxiety, that's insane. Yeah. I'm just happy, and I'm happy to be happy. I'm grateful for the opportunity to be happy, so I'm going to try and live there and not waste it on something that may or may not come. So, yeah.
Wow. Just the best. Take away from the podcast, chickens are the key to mental health.
For me, yeah. I think everybody would benefit from owning chickens, honestly. They're, I haven't had anyone come over that does not like laugh or just take deep breaths or something. It just makes you be present.
Oh my God. Oh, this was seriously so wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on. You as well.
Thank you for having me. It's always healing to look back. And I just want to tell 5 years ago me that one day we're far enough along that someone wants us to talk about how far we've come in this.